Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. With an old saying by John Maxwell that says, the pessimist complains about the wind, the optimist expects it to change, and the leader adjusts the sails. And adjusting the sales has certainly been a priority for leaders at all levels in recent years, as many companies have faced unprecedented change. So today we're discussing all things leadership, from culture to responsibility and everything in between. And to talk about this topic today, we're delighted to be joined by a leadership expert, a TEDx speaker, an elected member of Dublin Chamber, a best-selling author. This is all one person. The founder and CEO of the award-winning Lift Ireland is the wonderful Joanne Heshin. Thanks for joining us, Joanne. How are you?
I'm great, Owen. Thanks a million for having me on. And I love that you've chosen a John Maxwell quote because he's a good friend of mine.
Brilliant. Very good.
Yeah.
And as always, we're joined by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Owen. How are you keeping?
All good. Brilliant. So we'll jump right in. So I suppose coming to yourself first, Joanne. So can you talk to us a little about Lift, I suppose, first and the work you do?
Yeah, so Lift Ireland, well, we're a social enterprise. We were set up in 2018. And really what we do is we help organizations to transform their cultures through positive leadership. So the ins and outs of how we do that, I can go through, but that's in essence what we do. We started in 2018 with 24 founding partners and myself and a group of 12 other people. And we have grown since then under 4 years to over 20,000 people are now involved in Lift. So we're really exciting this roller. We're really enjoying this exciting roller coaster journey that we're on. It's great fun.
Brilliant. And one of the first things you said there, Joanne, I suppose, and kind of related to today's topic is positive leadership. Can you talk to us a little bit about positive leadership in your kind of sense of the word?
Yeah. So, I suppose let's look at it this way. Okay. Leadership at its real essence is about influence. Right. If you've got influence with somebody else, then you're leading them. And let's take two leaders. We've got Hitler. We've got Mother Teresa. We only applaud one of them. So in Lift, we're looking to really cultivate positive leadership, not any other kind of leadership. It's positive and ethical leadership that we're all about. There's really so many myths around leadership, Owen. You know, we get stuck. I don't know. I think you're probably a good bit younger than I am. But when I went to college and did business, you know, leadership and management were sort of, they were sort of put in the same sentences and the books were on the same shelves. In fact, the topics were in the same books, whereas leadership and management are two very, very different things. I mean, management is all about getting the right person in the right place to do the right thing at the right time, whereas leadership is something different. And I could be a great manager, but if you wanted to see if I was a great leader, all you'd have to do is ask me to create some positive change. And if nobody's following me, then I'm not leading anyone at all. So there are a lot of myths around leadership, and we're all about sort of debunking those myths and making sure that people are focusing on positive and ethical leadership. That's what's really important.
Brilliant. So building on kind of what Joanna said there, Mary, so I suppose my question to kind of get the ball rolling is really, how does leadership kind of affect company culture? I know for lots of HR initiatives, for example, senior leaders buy-in, that kind of thing is essential, but it's a lot more than that as well, Mary, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more, Joanne, because, you know, we're in HR and you're often looking at the leadership and have concerns about, you know, the way in which they're leading an organization and can see that real dissonance between what the espoused values of the organization are versus what everybody else is saying in the organization too. And I think sometimes there's that real disconnect between what the CEO, the shareholders, the board, the executive team think and what the rest of the organization think as well. And I really like the way you put it so simply. You know, that if people aren't following you, then you're not a leader. But what are you? And I think it goes back to, you know, what are we recruiting for in the first place? And typically a CEO has that kind of technical excellence in a way, and the C-suite tend to be where they are because of that technical excellence, not because of their people skill or their leadership skill. And then when it comes to change and change management, they're surprised when people don't follow them. They, you know, they put up these great strategies and visions and the missions and the values of the organization, and people don't buy into them despite fancy presentations, brilliant internal communications, all of that. And yet somehow there's that disconnect or that dissonance. So I think, you know, from a HR perspective, it really comes back to, well, you know, how are we developing leaders within the organization? How are we talking to leaders within the organization? How are we developing the C-suite?
Yeah, in fact, there. Oh, and I hope you don't mind me coming in here, but there's some gorgeous research done by a guy called Fred Keel, Dr. Fred Keel, in HBR in 2015, all around the character of the leader. Just as you're talking there about hiring people that end up in C-suite for their technical skills, he looked at the character of 120 CEOs, he looked at 120 CEOs, and he showed how the CEOs with the highest character rating, as rated by their people that worked with them and all around them, those that had the highest character got highest return on assets. So a direct, you know, a correlation with the financial side of things, which was, I loved seeing that when that came out in 2015, that sometimes we think it's the icing on the cake, having someone who's, you know, a nice person that we might want, but it's actually so much more than that. It's really, really important. Leadership, we call leadership, we talk about leadership positions, but leadership is not a position or a title. It's another one of those myths. It's I have a title in my organization as CEO of my organization, but unless I lead well, unless I, you know, have got good character, unless I have integrity, and unless I listen and so on, nobody wants to follow me. My title buys me a little bit of time with my people, but that's all it does. It's just a position. And leadership is all about who we are on the inside, and really being much bigger on the inside than we are on the outside, which I love too.
Was John, a kind of a tricky question, is leadership only for leaders in the kind of true sense of the word?
No, it's not. Every single person, Owen, is a leader. Every person. So think about this. If you've got people around you who are paying attention to what you're saying, okay? So think about your own situations. If you've got people around you that are paying attention to what you're saying, then you're leading them. And sometimes you're leading them well, and sometimes you're leading them not so well. Now, sometimes the people around you are paying a lot of attention, and sometimes they're just paying a little attention. So in my situation, I've got a team at work, but I've also got three teenagers. So sometimes my teenagers are paying attention to what I'm saying. Sometimes they're not. So sometimes I'm leading them. Sometimes I'm not. So leadership is very active. Sometimes they're leading me. Sometimes I'm leading them. In the case of my teenagers, I just have to hope that I'm leading them more than they're leading me. But it means that a 14-year-old at school is a leader. They've got people around them who maybe not all the time are paying attention to what they're saying, but some of the time are. And when they are paying attention to what they're saying, they either lead them well or not so well. And what we're all about is helping people of all ages to build their leadership character, so that when we're influencing someone else, we're influencing in a positive way. We're having positive leadership. So there's a real misunderstanding about leadership, in that we think that it's mostly CEOs and exco teams and so on, and people with leadership titles, and we call them leadership. But actually, leadership is far more active than that. Every single person is a leader, and everybody can develop and grow as a leader.
So Mary, bringing it back to that kind of HR piece you spoke about earlier, so I suppose another kind of side of things with HR, leadership, that kind of thing, is that HR is often kind of the middle ground between leadership and the wider population, whether that be from C-suite, top level, line managers, whatever it may be. So I suppose, Mary, my question to you is, how can HR teams kind of support that culture of leadership across all levels?
Yeah, and I think just on Joanne's point there, you know, in HR, we often see that, you know, when we're trying to bring about change in the organization, for instance, that there's somebody disgruntled at the lower levels of the organization that absolutely fundamentally gets in the way of that kind of change. And in that way that they're using their influence and their power amongst their peers to lead in a certain direction. And, you know, from a HR perspective, always we're balancing between the executive, the CEO, the line management, and employees in general. And I guess it comes back to things like structure, doesn't it? You know, how is the organization actually structured? Are we really operating at that pyramid level where we've got the CEO cascading down to the executive, cascading down to the management, and in theory down to all of the employees? So how do we do that effectively? How do we develop people? And I think part of it comes back to being authentic as individuals, you know, as the management, as the executive, you know, being authentic with our voice, listening to our people, understanding different perspectives is so important, because that disconnect is so often there between the C-suite and the rest of the organization. And I think there's probably just not enough time spent by leaders, you know, getting those different perspectives. And when I talk about leaders in that respect, I'm talking about those with positions, with the title of leader, as opposed to those who may be leading, left to their own devices and leading within their departments or within the organization itself. And I think there's probably not enough time, again, between the C-suite and the middle management, who actually know a hell of a lot about what's happening in the organization. And then when it comes to the challenges and the barriers and the things that get in the way of people effectively doing their job and ultimately the organization achieving its strategy, if your leadership, your designated leadership, are not in touch with the front line, those who are doing the job on a daily basis, I think there can be real challenges. So from a HR perspective, when it comes to looking at leadership, I guess it's having a very broad understanding of what that is, developing programs where you're spotting those leaders, good and bad, right throughout the organization, irrespective of title, and looking at the various programs that you can put in place so that the organization is all moving in a cohesive way in the one direction. And a lot of people think of that as a bit of pie in the sky, a bit of, you know, fancy psychological babble. But there's a real value for those leaders who understand it, and who can support those kind of programs in an organization. I think you can achieve change much more easily.
I know with Lyft, Joanne, I suppose you've worked with a lot of teams, dozens of countless teams over the course of the years. Can you talk to us about some of the work you've done specifically with HR teams and how it has kind of affected your organizations?
Yeah, so Lyft is quite different in that it's not a training program. What it is a process that we roll out with HR teams throughout their organization. So we identify a number of people in the organizations that are going to facilitate the process, and we spend a day with those people and we show them exactly how to facilitate the process. And then throughout the organization, we take clusters of small groups. And the lovely thing in what you're saying, Mary, about different levels of the organization not necessarily hearing each other, Lyft is rolled out and it is different levels of the organization that do Lyft together. So in one group of five people doing Lyft together, they meet for 45 minutes once a week. And you could have the CEO, you could have someone that's a week in the organization, you could have somebody that is there, you know, 20 years in this small group. And it is one of the people in the group has spent a day with us, and they facilitate this small group through a self-directed reflective process. Nobody's teaching anyone, nobody's counseling anyone, nobody's coaching anyone. Everybody gets a chance to go through the LIFT process, which is really scientifically research-based, all that gorgeous stuff. But it helps you to stop and think, how well have I been leading and how do I get a little bit better? The groups are all in a very safe and confidential environment, and we roll them out with HR teams. So we've done it with some teams with thousands of people in their organization and some teams with 10 and 20 people in their organization. And we work hand in hand with the HR team to show them how it's rolled out. It really, do you know, I've been in training and education my whole life. And I actually, I set up my own business in my 20s in training and education. I left it to run with LIFT because when I saw the process being used in South America, and when I saw it, I thought this is so easy. We could scale this and we could do it nationwide. I very much didn't want to do it in a for-profit way because I wanted our charities and our schools to be able to access it, and our principals as much as our private organizations. So we roll it out with all types of organizations. So we've worked with HR teams in many, many different ways. And in fact, even though we're only 3.5 years old, we've already won the HR Global Award for Leadership with the Prem Group. We won the Employee Engagement and Trust Award last year with Permanent TSB, and we're a finalist this year with in CIBPD awards for the change management, the sustainable change management program, because now Permanent TSB have been using it a number of years and are really seeing sustainable change. So, you know, it's an interesting thing because I know myself from being in this industry a long, long time that sometimes we want to take on the shiny new thing. And what I will say is that with LIFT, consistency is key. This is a behavior change process. It absolutely works and we're getting phenomenal results out of it. But like going to the gym, and I don't know about you two, but it's not my favorite thing in the world to do. But like going to the gym, I have to keep going to get lasting effect. So that's where the organizations that are really staying consistent and keep on doing LIFT cycles are really seeing benefits. I mean, you'll see it, LIFT has an immediate effect from the very first time you start to roll it out. It has an immediate effect on people's awareness and behavior change because it's a process. It's not an event that you forget about, you know, 20 days later. It's actually a process. So it's a bit like learning to swim. We keep throwing you into the swimming pool, and each time you get in, you start to swim. LIFT is like that too. Every round table you do, you're doing a little bit more lifting, thinking about your own leadership. It's a very powerful process. So we've worked with many HR teams. The other thing that we do is in LIFT, we're really interested in what is important to Ireland, as in what makes a good leader in Ireland. And so we've identified the areas that Ireland, well, we haven't identified them. Ireland has chosen, if we're to lead well in Ireland, these are the things we want to focus on. But within organizations, they have their own values and their own priorities, their own behaviors that they're looking for. So we have taken their values off the walls and we've integrated them into the process so that people are stopping and thinking, and it's really creating a real embedding process for organizations in how are we actually living these values on a day-to-day basis. And that's extremely powerful. There isn't another process like it, either in Ireland or anywhere. It's fantastic. So we're seeing huge results. I pulled off some of them. 97.4 people of those that have been engaged in LIFT long term are seeing lasting behavior change benefits. And 97% of adults are improving their understanding of what good leadership really is, that it's about having positive influence on other people and how I do that, and that my behaviors and actions can cause a lot of stress for the people around me and anxiety for the people around me. And that's how I'm leading, and that's important. And over 86% of adults are coming out of LIFT talking about and giving us examples and multiple examples of not just awareness raising, but where their behavior is changing. And look, your audience is a HR, you know how hard behavior change is. If it was easy, I would drink 2 liters of water every day, I'd exercise every day, and I'd eat a load of greens because I know it's important for me, but it's not easy. So LIFT is a phenomenal behavior change process. That's what it starts to get for people. And now we're seeing the lasting change over the nearly 4 years that we've been up and running.
Brilliant. I think a lot of those fundamentals are kind of the things we'd see in our work as well, Mary, isn't it? In the sense that like employee voice is huge, that consistent, sustainable model of whatever we do, plus the kind of core values and that kind of thing as well. So those key fundamentals do really jump out, Mary, don't they?
They do. And I think in so many ways, you know, the pandemic, for all the difficulty that has been associated with it and all the challenges that people have had individually, the one thing that has changed is leaders have become a bit more authentic and we can relate to them a little bit better because we have a look into their houses now, we have a look into their lives, we see the interruptions that they as human beings face in the same way as all the rest of it, their dogs, their pets, their families, their challenges, their connectivity. In the same way as everybody else, and in many ways within an organization, you know, the C-suite in particular sit up there in a pedestal, and you know, they look to the organization to follow them, but it's not as simple as that. And when it comes to organizational change, so many change programs fail for the simple reason that the leadership don't actually have the support of the people that they're leading, and they don't have the influence of the people that they're leading. And you know, you will have HR people, you will have internal communications, you will have marketing, you will have a whole range of people trying to support the leadership in putting forward messaging. But unless the leaders themselves understand that the role they play, unless they really honestly take a look at themselves and, you know, embrace learning for themselves, understanding that they don't have all of the answers. If they did have all of the answers, just as Joanne says, you know I shouldn't eat a cake. I know that because of the maybe long-term impact that might have on my body. But I like cakes, so I am going to eat them. And how do we change that in terms of your mindset? How do we change the way in which people think? And the pandemic has got us to the point where, you know, the role of leaders has changed within organizations, and the role of managers has changed within organizations. And if we stick with traditional models, which are about looking at what our people are doing and seeing them present in offices or buildings, then we're going to have a problem. And that agility is required. So we do need to, you know, rethink all of these things. Joanne, your lift sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. In terms of the impact that it can have in an organization, and in terms of supporting those change programs that so many organizations engage in, and they lose steam somewhere along the line when people revert back to, well, this is how we do things here, and they're absolute barriers to, you know, the organization achieving what it espouses.
Yeah, I Mary, you're so right, and I've seen the most amazing leaders do amazing things over the pandemic. I mean, one organization that contacted me at 6:30 in the morning, once Leo had made the announcement that we were closing down, immediately said, we need Lyft and we need it online. And they were in the tourism sector, and they had to let a lot of their people go. And the CEO and the management team they were running Lyft roundtables. They'd run it before, so it was sort of part of their organization's fabric. They had to let a lot of their staff go. They ran roundtables with people, with their staff that they had let go. So it meant they were still meeting in these groups of small groups. The CEO was, the general managers were, with these small groups. And so they were able to hear each other. And in a roundtable, you're not allowed to comment on what anybody else says, but you hear what's going on with them. So somebody who was just like, oh, got to hear what was on the CEO's mind and what they were good, it really shows an enormous authenticity. And that organization, their value, one, their number one value is to do the right thing. And I have to say, I was blown away. And similarly, I've done a number of the roundtables with Exco teams, with CEOs. And the thing about it is that what I keep coming to the back to is that, you know, I don't intend to behave badly. You know, my intentions are always really good, but sometimes I do. You know, sometimes I do. Sometimes I meet my parents and I look at my phone when I'm chatting to them and they're in their 80s and I shouldn't. And I'm, you know, I'm not showing them the respect that they deserve and I'm not listening properly. So sometimes I do, and I don't intend it, but I do. And that's the difference. Our intentions are, in my mind, nearly are always good, actually. And I think with all CEOs, with all people in leadership positions, intentions are good, but our actions don't always match up to them. And so what LIFT helps us to do is it gives us that one sort of 40 to 45 minutes a week to stop and think, hang on, what have been my, you know, and it's such a directed self-reflective process. It's very easy to do, but it's sort of, okay, Joanne, there's where you had a crease in your behavior. You didn't intend to, but you did. You had a crease in your behavior there. And what are you going to do to get a little bit of a behavior change in that? And that's how it works. So, you know, it's lovely. We have a saying in our house now, with my three teenagers, we could be driving along and see somebody that, you know, one of my teenagers might feel is very different to them. And they'll say, I wonder what they're like on a round table. Because when you meet someone in a round table, you hear their intentions, but you also hear how they might have acted, and you get to see the real human. And that's what so often we don't get in our companies that we'd really love to get, but the mask is somehow on. And the, you know, the sort of feeling that we should be 10 out of 10 all the time and everything, that's ridiculous. We just can't. It's impossible for us to do that. So LIFT allows you to see the human in a very humane way and a very safe way, and always focusing on the better is possible. It's really interesting.
I wonder why leadership and those with that designated responsibility for leadership feel that if people knew them and saw them as real human beings, I wonder why they think that would interfere with people's willingness to follow them. Because the reality is every single human being has their insecurities. And when you speak to a CEO, and in HR, you know, we often do, because you, in the role, if you're doing your job well, you will have that very close relationship with the CEO, and you'll have the ear of the CEO, and they will reveal things about themselves and their lives and their challenges and their families and all of those things that actually just make them more human and make them more relatable too. And yet when the CEO is trotted out in front of the organization, they're presenting themselves as perfect beings with all the answers, and that really does sometimes get in the way of you know, their relatability, if that's even a word, within the organization. And so I'd love to see more authentic leadership, because it counts for more.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing them. And one of the things I did not expect in catapulting myself out of my business and into deciding to do LIFT for 10 years, I didn't expect to meet the great people that I'm meeting. It's attracting those people that really want that authenticity and that really believe in positive and ethical leadership. And, you know, and honestly, I think the best leaders are those, the strongest ones are those that have the strength to show their vulnerability in the way that's right for the situation. But I have to say, I am meeting the most amazing people across all levels of organizations, from CEO throughout, who who all know that we're kidding ourselves if we just pretend that we're perfect. Sure, none of us are. You know, that's just ridiculous. And to think that none of us fail, sure, we all fail every day in different things that we choose. We just have to make sure that we fail forward and we fail fast and we get up quickly and we brush ourselves off and we just keep moving. But I think it's going to become very dated, that whole idea that leaders, can't be vulnerable. They can't have strength in vulnerability because they can. You know, we're human. We're human. It's such a funny thing that we nearly, when we go through the revolving doors of some of our organizations, that we forget that we're all humans. We are all exactly the same. I remember doing a roundtable with them, and it was with some teenagers, and one of them, a young boy, 16, and he was reflecting on himself, and he said, golly, we were doing a roundtable about respect, and he was examining in the last 24 hours, has he had respect for the people around him? And he said, you know what, I've just realized that I don't respect anybody around me. And he said, I've also just realized that they don't act like they respect me either. And it was just such a huge comment from a 16-year-old. I just thought, wow. And the nature of it is, I'm not allowed comment. Now, I was old enough to be his mother, but I'm not allowed comment. But it was just the way the cogs were turning and how he was stopping and thinking about it. Now, if you think about it, if we can get our young people to think about it, and if we at my age can think about it, and in our universities, and in our across all of society, we will create a nation that understands leadership better and allows that more authentic leadership from the top to every part of an organization. And as a country, we all know that's what we want. That's what we want.
I think you're both kind of alluded to it there as well, in the sense that my last question was going to be how the HR agenda, how HR teams, their role has been strengthened the past couple of years by the pandemic. But I suppose my real question, and what I really mean by that, is it's those objectives of HR have been strengthened. It's about that cultural change. It's about that authentic leadership. So it definitely has kind of got a stronger seat at the table in that sense, Mary, hasn't it? Where it's kind of more about the objectives and, look, leaders can be authentic. We can have a positive culture, those kind of things.
Yeah, well, in the last 2 years, HR has played that role and been an advocate for employee well-being and rolled out many programs, whether it's in HR or wellness or whatever, you know, to support employees who have been spread out and disparate for the first time. And, you know, I also think that HR in itself has work to do around how ethical they are in their leadership. You know, it's a hard job. And at times, the things that HR people have to do aren't easy. So, you know, Joanne, when you talk about an organization that has to downsize or make people redundant, often at the forefront of those processes are HR people who have a really difficult job to do and have to hold themselves support the organization, the leadership team, make sure that the employees are supported at the same time, and they bridge that gap in many respects, bringing the human element to communication and ensuring that, you know, when management or a board or the C-suite make these decisions, whatever those decisions might be, whether that's, you know, closing down a department, stopping a product line, changing its direction and its need for certain groups of people, whatever it might be, HR are often tasked with those responsibilities. And again, you know, the need for time to reflect on our leadership role within organizations needs to be there too. And reflective practice I have found to be incredibly powerful myself, in terms of sitting back. Sometimes you don't even know what you think until you have the opportunity to stop, talk to others, express your thoughts. And that's why I think what Lyft do is so amazing, because it creates that opportunity without interruption, without someone shouting you down and saying, I disagree with your thoughts around this thing, and allows people to be more human. So again, from a HR point of view, there's lots of pressures, lots of stresses, lots of strains, lots of challenges being straddled between the C-suite and the management and the employee body. There's lots of challenges, and time to reflect is important, and ensure that you're ethical in everything that you do as well, because it's fundamental to how the organization operates. I'm often amazed when you hear about a whole layer of executives who lie about something in an organization. You know, who has led them to that point? Why has there been nobody within those organizations that have raised their hands and said, I don't think this is right? Now, maybe there'll be a consequence and you lose your job for standing up and saying, I don't believe this is right. But you can be quite amazed sometimes. And there's some really well documented examples of global organizations who have told lies about their products or their offerings or their services, and a whole executive going along with it. I wonder how that happens.
Yeah, Mary, listen, you and I need to meet and have a cup of coffee and chat about this loads, because that's exactly why I set up Lyft. Exactly that. I was there going, what is it? We are good people in this country. You know, what is it that stops us putting up the hand and saying, hang on, that's not good enough? Like, I watched the Morris McCabe Tribunal, the whole documentary. I'm watching that and I know good guards. I know really good guards. How did he get put through that? How did it happen that the negative was so powerful? And, you know, I always bring it down to, it's a little bit like in a school playground. You know, you've got 100 kids there, and let's say you've only got 3 bullies and you've got 97 that aren't. But when you're in the playground, you know where the bullies are. You know, you sort of know where they are in the playground because you want to stay away. And, you know, so the, you know, 3 is very powerful in a group of 100. Negativity is very powerful. It can all be very powerful until that person has that courage and confidence and that backbone and is bigger on the inside to put up their hand and say, hang on, that's not right. And I tell you what I'm loving is I was at a meeting before COVID, and it was of a number of different, we were all from different organizations at this meeting, and somebody was being spoken about at the meeting, and really not spoken about in a respectful way. And I glanced across the table, and the person across the table was a very senior corporate person, and they were involved in Lyft and I was involved in Lyft, and immediately, it was sort of that happened to us in the room. I put up my hand. I said, do you know what? That guy's not in the room. You know, now let's just not. Now, I was a small fry in the room. It was a big room with big, powerful people or big, powerful positions. But all it takes is one person. And then they rode in right behind me because they knew that's not the right thing. And so we need more of us to have that backbone and to know that, yeah, like, and the way I look at it is, and I know our jobs are really important, and I know money is really important, but at the end of the day, when I pop my clogs, right, you know, I want to be standing in front of my maker, whoever he is or she is, it doesn't matter who they are, but I want to be standing there and saying, well, you know, I did my best to do the right thing, and I also did my best to, you know, in this country that I absolutely love, to that I know wants to do the right thing, to share out something that would build all of our backbone and help us all to do a little bit better. And that's what Lyft is. It's the whole reason it was set up in the first place.
Yeah, and so, you know, we have a support line, Joanne, where, you know, we support HR people in their roles, whatever they might be dealing with. And that could be, you know, simply transactional or operational and something that they have to do. But I'm always struck by, you know, the distress that can be there for HR people when they are confronted with something that goes against their values or their beliefs, and being tasked at the same time with having to deliver it in the organization. And I would always encourage people, you know, if there's something that is really making you uncomfortable, it is so important that you at least express your opinion about it. You may not be able to control the direction the organization takes, but you can at least speak your mind about something. And people are fearful of that, but it often doesn't result in you losing your job or your position or your place in the organization. It usually results in somebody listening to what you have to say and respecting you more for having said it. Not always the case. I appreciate that. I'm not coming from a happy clappy place where every organization is lovely and that, you know, there aren't some real difficulties faced by people. But I'm always stunned by how a whole group of people can collude together to do the wrong thing too, with nobody putting their hand up, and HR have that opportunity to at least be that conscience too, by raising an issue. But your programs and lifts sound amazing, Joanne.
Oh, listen, we'll have to get you involved.
Yeah, love to.
Brilliant. So a bit of a quick fire one to finish on. So I know we've kind of shared some kind of tips and tricks there, but any kind of final guidance, I suppose, for HR teams, leaders, that they can kind of, I suppose, kind of look at their leadership values, or any kind of just, I suppose, quick fire tips to finish up with?
Yeah, and I think as well, we've talked a lot about leadership, but haven't really, what we have to remind ourselves is that we influence people by how much we listen, the positive attitude that we have, the respect that we show to ourselves and to other people. How we hold ourselves accountable and how we hold other people accountable, but in a kind and respectful way. You know, like, leadership is made up of all these little things. These are the things that build trust. It's the empathy that we have and making sure that we put ourselves in other people's shoes. It's our drive and determination. It's our resilience. It's our innovation. All these are characteristics that make great leaders. They're the things that we need to stop and think and reflect on. And as Mary said earlier, it's the reflective practice, because we all say, oh, experience is the best teacher, but it's actually not. It's reflection on the experience. I can go through a whole load of experiences and just keep doing them again and again, but it's only if I reflect on them and I stop and I learn that I actually start to make a change. So I would encourage people, any HR professional, have a look at Lyft. It's we're a social enterprise, so we're not trying to sell anything. We're trying to get it to as many people as we can around the country. And we ask any private organizations to financially contribute to us so we can give it for free to the charities and the schools and all the other organizations that can't afford to access it. But it is a way of stopping and reflecting on all these values and characteristics of being a good leader to get better. So if you want to do something, do it one person at a time, one conversation at a time with Lyft.
Brilliant. So thanks so much, Mary and Joanne, for a very insightful discussion. We've absolutely crammed a lot of tips and tricks in there. So really do appreciate the time and the insights from both of you. Thank you to everyone, obviously, for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion, of course, on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic, which I'm sure there will be many. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.